and endure. So this is the case of State of Minnesota versus Corey Alexander Peterson. Please identify yourselves for us, and you may proceed on behalf of appellant, but let me just make sure we also have counsel for respondent somewhere. Is counsel go ahead.
Yes. This is Russ Conroy, county attorney for respondent.
Okay. Now, ordinarily, when a party on ITV, a lawyer speaks up, we can see you. I could not see you, Mr. Conroy, so please give me another couple of statements. Just say hello again.
Hello. This is Russ Conroy from Lake County.
Okay, something is wrong here, so we're going to see if the clerk can figure that out, and we'll just sit here for a moment. Oh, all right. I'm being told, Mr. Conroy, that you need to talk for 5 or 10 seconds. So please tell us about where you are and how the weather is.
Well, right now I'm in Duluth. I drove down from Two Harbors just recently, and weather seems to be fine.
That did it. All right. Thank you. So now we'll go back to Mr. Lundgren, we hope. Mr. Lundgren, apparently now you have to tell us about the weather.
Well, Your Honor, it's fairly sunny outside. It's a bit warmer than yesterday, so I am enjoying that part of it, and as long as it doesn't snow.
We've got you back on the screen. Just where are you?
St. Paul, Minnesota.
Okay. All right. Well, I know that weather. All right. Now you may proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Counsel for the state, my name is David Lundgren, on behalf of the appellant, Corey Peterson. I'm here to ask the court today to reverse Mr. Peterson's conviction for possessing a firearm on a designated game refuge for lack of sufficient evidence. The lack of sufficient evidence argument has two subparts. One relates to whether or not the game refuge at issue in this case, the Two Harbors Game Refuge, ever became effective, or whether the state proved that it ever became effective at trial. The second part is whether or not the correct scienter element or the correct mens rea element was applied to this offense. I'll start with the brief recitation of the facts and then move to the argument. On November 12th of 2017, Conservation officers Murray and Miller responded to Corey Peterson's property in Lake County.
Tell us when he purchased that property.
Mr. Peterson purchased that property to be a lake home where he could hunt on. It's not in the record, and I'm not sure of the exact date of when he purchased it.
The year?
It was within a year of this offense.
Okay.
The officer's response to Mr. Peterson's property was prompted by a complaint of some suspected firearm discharges in the area. His property is located just off of Old North Shore Road at a dead end. Officer Miller arrived first. Upon his entrance onto Old North Shore Road, he saw a game refuge sign in the right-hand ditch of that road. It is the only public entrance to access Mr. Peterson's property. The distance between Mr. Peterson's property and that game refuge sign was estimated to be somewhere between a quarter mile and a half mile. And that equates to about 1,320 feet to 2,640 feet. Once at the property, Officer Miller had a discussion with Mr. Peterson, and Mr. Peterson admitted to discharging a firearm, not on that day, but about a week prior for deer opener. Mr. Peterson openly admitted that fact, and he said that he had done some research on the issue. He had looked to see whether or not his property did lie within a game refuge and couldn't find any information on it. He looked on the Minnesota Revisor of Statutes website. He had some Minnesota DNR resources. He couldn't see anything that indicated his property was located within the game refuge. Officer Miller inspected the property further and saw one more game refuge sign approximately 35 yards from a hunting blind that was constructed on Mr. Peterson's property. That game refuge sign was pointing away from Mr. Peterson's property, so not inwards but outwards. And those were the only two game refuge signs that were located on or near the property that were testified to by the officers.
Counsel, does the record tell us the size of Mr. Peterson's property, the acreage?
Mr. Peterson submitted an abstract of his property as Exhibit 13, which does have the size. It describes the boundaries of the properties. And one of the boundaries of his properties is described as approximately 1,250 feet. So there is a number of acres that are included in Mr. Peterson's property. I don't know the exact acreage, but that abstract does refer to it. Both officers testified that they did not know whether the boundaries and entrances into the game refuge were properly posted, meaning within 500 feet of each other along the entire boundaries and at every public intersection into the game refuge. Neither officer testified.
Getting to your arguments in the brief, am I understanding your argument correctly to be that in order to sustain this conviction, the evidence has to show beyond a reasonable doubt that the land on which Mr. Peterson possessed the firearm was in fact a game refuge? And your argument is that although there is evidence in the record that Mr. Peterson's property is within property that had been the subject of a public dedication for game refuge designation, the requirements of that order, as well as the requirements of statute necessary to effectuate that order, never occurred, or there's no proof that they ever occurred. Therefore, there's no proof that this was actually or is actually a game refuge.
That's correct. It's undisputed that there is a game refuge order, that Mr. Peterson's property lies within the area described in that order, but it's the question is whether or not the state ever proved that order became effective. Because by the unambiguous language in the order itself and statute says in order for that game refuge to become effective, it has to be properly posted as provided by law. Now, and that same statute.
The red brief, I think at one point, might suggest that the state thinks your argument is, well, it has to be posted and remain posted at all times. Are you saying the problem is that it's not currently posted or that there is no evidence that it was ever posted in accordance with statute such that it actually became a state game refuge?
The argument is the latter, that there's no proof that it ever became effective.
So your position today would be this isn't a game refuge?
That it wasn't proved at trial that there was an effective game refuge.
I suppose that's something that will be litigated later.
Mr. Leiter, to follow up with that, does that suggest your client does not dispute, or at least the more than an inference that he knew it was a game refuge? You're simply indicating at trial it was not proven, and as we sit here today, it may not be a game refuge, but he's had the signs on the only road that goes into his property where he set up his deer stand.
I would disagree with that. He did research on the issue of whether or not his property lied within the game refuge. He tried to find information on it, and he didn't find any. He asked a title company whether there was anything recorded on his property. They couldn't find anything of record about the game refuge. There wasn't anything noted in his abstract about the game refuge being encumbering his property. Like I said, he went and did some research through Minnesota DNR materials and online. You couldn't find anything about this game refuge. So at the time of this offense, I do not believe that he had knowledge of the game refuge, that he knew it was a game refuge, or that he intended to possess a firearm within the game refuge. It wasn't until after this offense that he discovered this game refuge order number 142, which designated the area as a game refuge that would become effective if it was properly posted at some point in the future. With regard to the state's argument that whether or not the entire boundary was posted or whether or not a partial area of the boundary was posted, and therefore because of the two signs that were located on one near Mr. Peterson's property and the other on the road, the public road coming into Mr. Peterson's property, I would argue that neither of those signs are sufficient under statute or the order to create a boundary, because those two signs are not within 500 feet of each other.
I have a question. So they can't can two signs create a boundary? It seems to me you'd need at least three signs, so you'd make a triangular shape. How would two signs ever create a partial boundary if it has to be an enclosed area?
I would agree with Your Honor. I used two because I was trying to get creative. Yeah. Right.
So there's only evidence of two signs total, right?
That's the only evidence in the record. That's correct.
And no certificate of posting, which would be prima facie evidence of posting under the statute?
That's correct. The statute, I believe, or the legislature anticipated the difficulty in proving exactly this by saying there can be a certification from all of these different officials and official agencies. And if you present that in the record, that's a prima facie showing of the element that was missing in Mr. Peterson's trial. With regard to the intent or knowledge that's required under the statute, it is admittedly silent on the issue. It criminalizes, it makes a misdemeanor offense for anyone who possesses a firearm that is uncased or constructed together within a game refuge. And for many reasons, I believe that a mens rea element should be read into the statute. And I outlined those reasons within appellant's brief, but I'll briefly go over those elements right now.
Before you do, could you tell the court whether it's necessary for the court to reach that issue if the court were to conclude that the state did not establish beyond a reasonable doubt that this order ever became effective due to lack of posting?
I don't believe it's necessary for the court to reach that issue. If the court were so defined, I believe the narrowest grounds raised by appellant are whether or not this game refuge was proven to be effective by the state.
Okay, thank you.
If the court does reach that issue, I believe that the longstanding history and commonplace nature of the possession of firearms within Minnesota, especially long guns and hunting rifles, and the act of hunting cut against finding a strict liability offense in possessing a firearm within a game refuge. I also believe that the legislature would have spoken more clearly if it had intended to make a strict liability offense of an activity that's so common and heralded in our state. Most importantly, a possession of a firearm is not so inherently dangerous where it should be a regulatory offense or a strict liability offense or a public welfare offense. Those offenses are traditionally applied to instances where the item is so inherently dangerous where the person is on notice that their possession of it could be illegal. Things like illicit drugs that are addictive, things like hand grenades, things like obnoxious materials that are poisonous to the public, not long guns and hunting rifles. So I believe that also weighs in favor of reading into a knowledge or intent requirement into this specific statute. And Minnesota courts historically disfavor strict liability statutes. For those reasons, Mr. Peterson asks that his conviction for possessing a firearm within a game refuge be reversed by this court, and absent a rebuttal, I thank the court for its time.
Thank you. We'll give you an opportunity for rebuttal. Mr. Corwin, I think we need to have you start talking in order for us to see you.
All right, my name is Mr. Russ Conroy from Lake
Conroy.
County.
Conroy. Did I say Conroy? Conroy.
I think you said Corwin. I think.
I did? Oh, geez. I'm very sorry. I got two or three of the letters right. It's Conroy. Conroy.
Conroy.
Conroy.
Conroy.
Thank you. Right. Now we can see you.
All right. May it please the court and counsel. A couple things I wanted to clear up in terms of the facts. In my brief, I did mention the sign near the deer stand, and as counsel for appellant was correct in saying that it was 35 yards. I think in my brief I said 35 feet. It was in fact 35 yards as described by Officer Miller. The other thing about this property, it is 30 acres. It's unique in that there was some discussion about the signage, why there wasn't a third sign. And if you look on the map, I think it's map 3 that appellant provided for the trial court. You can see that this property, it's a large piece of property that is undeveloped, or it's clear cut. So it's an open field on the North Shore between the old North Shore Highway, which was the boundary of the game refuge, and the lake. So if you're looking for that third sign to provide another boundary, it's the lake shore on one side, it's the old North Shore Highway, to the north, and to the east is the railroad yard. You can see the tracks on that map 3,
well,
which is...
Counsel, at trial, when Officer Miller was asked about the sign posting and shown the 8, I think they must have been photographs, it says pictures, he was asked if the minimum posting was satisfied. And his answer was, I don't know. So what evidence is there in the record that the posting requirement was satisfied?
In terms of what evidence was in the record, I don't know if you've ever had an opportunity to have a contested traffic ticket trial.
Oh, yes.
Many times.
Where someone shows up and starts arguing about an 1854 treaty or the territorial government transfer to the state government rights.
Counsel, right. I get where you're going, but here's the thing. The state has the burden of proof here. The state charged this guy with possessing a firearm in a state game refuge. So the state has to prove it's a state game refuge. I'm not buying into any sort of unfair surprise or an off-the-wall argument when the defendant says this isn't a state game refuge. I mean,
you have the officer testifying that yes, this is a state game refuge, that the appellant's property is entirely within the game refuge. You have him present.
But the officer also can. Let me just ask this. Do you agree that according to statute and the terms of this order, 142, I think it is, this dedication of a state game refuge did not become effective, never became effective, unless there was posting in compliance with statutory requirements?
I think if it was posted, as I said in the brief, that if it was posted partially, that part became a valid game refuge.
Okay, and your position is these two signs were enough of a... Well, do we even know that the two signs are the 500 feet apart as they're supposed to be according to statute?
I don't know that, and I can't tell you today that in 1946, when this game refuge was created, that there was a sign every 500 feet along the boundary of the game refuge.
But doesn't the state have to prove that in order to prove that the order became effective such that this is, in fact, a game refuge? I appreciate that it's really difficult to do, but what I'm getting at is, despite the difficulties, that's what the statute requires, and it seems that the legislature foresaw the possibility of problems by saying if you get a certificate of posting by one of these people, that's your prima facie evidence. So we don't even have that here.
No, and we didn't have it on that day. We did not have it on that day in the courtroom. The history of the 1946 creation of the game refuge. We had the officer's testimony of 70 years of recognition by the community, 70 years of enforcement by the DNR, and his recognition and the posting of the signs onto defendant's appellant's property to give him notice.
I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate the circumstances as they existed, but we have to review the record that was created and determine whether or not there's proof beyond a reasonable doubt that the posting occurred, which might be difficult in this case.
It might be difficult, but then the issue is going back to this surprise, there was no with these traffic type cases or these ticket type cases, there's no discovery. There's no what are the issues that we're going to discuss? What does the state need to be prepared to address? We brought the officers in who provided the detailed background of the violation and the refuge as far as they know and how as much in their training and their operation they've been enforcing.
Counsel, switching to the second issue, the district court found that the defendant was on inquiry notice of the status of the game refuge. Now, I did some research on inquiry notice, and I could only come up with one published case that discusses inquiry notice, and it's a civil case. What case law can you tell us about that would suggest that inquiry notice is sufficient to satisfy the mens rea element that is presumed to be an element of the offense?
I don't have any case law to cite to that. One of the issues that the mens rea element, as counsel has said, is something that he's arguing for in this statute. And he's talking about that he has to know that he's on the game refuge with a firearm. And the court heard the evidence. They heard the evidence of Officer Miller, who said he responded to a citizen's complaint that someone that a shot had been fired in the area of the game refuge. He also heard the testimony of Officer Murray, who said he received a citizen's complaint about the deer stand being built in the game refuge. And
I understand that, but what evidence can you point to in the record that would support a finding that the defendant, the appellant, knew that he was possessing a firearm on a game refuge? Not should have known, but knew.
We can't pop open his head and look and see that, there he knew, but he drove by the sign every time he entered his property. State game refuge. It wasn't down in the ditch, it's along the side of the road. There's three parcels on that road. It's at the first parcel as soon as you make your turn off of the public road onto that private driveway.
So is that sign on his property?
That sign is on the road into his property.
But then the sign that's 35 yards from the hunting blind is actually on his property?
I'm not sure where the boundary is. It's right on the fence line. The railroad tracks drop, it drops off down to the railroad tracks, and the sign is at the top of the hill of the railroad tracks right next to the fence for his property. So we don't do a lot of game refuge cases. We do trespass cases, and I look at the trespass statute, which is 97B.01. And in a similar sense, when people are hunting, we're concerned that they're not trespassing on other people's property. If someone enters land that is posted, there's no scienter requirement there. There's no mens rea requirement. The fact that they're entered onto that posted property is an offense. And that's similar to this, that if you enter onto a game refuge with a weapon, that's an offense.
But counsel, by that logic, wouldn't we have a circumstance where if I post signs around my property that say state game refuge, even though it's not a state game refuge, someone on my property could be charged with a firearm on a state game refuge. I mean, the issue here really is, at heart, is this a refuge or not? I mean, your brief seems to argue, it's like, well, look, he had the gun in this area. There's a couple of signs. That's all true, but the statute doesn't say you're guilty of a crime if you possess a firearm in an area where there are some signs. It says you're guilty of a crime if it is, in fact, a state game refuge.
Right. And this area was created by the appropriate hearing. It was designated. It was all started by a petition of citizens in the area. It has a long history of enforcement and operation.
We just need better evidence of posting at some point in time.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree. And I have nothing further, unless there's other questions.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Conroe. Any rebuttal?
Just briefly, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
With regard to the location of the initial sign, I represented to the court that initial sign was in the ditch, and where I got that from was page 29 of the transcript, where Officer Miller testified, I wouldn't say it's at the driveway. It's along the old North Shore Road, the public road that leads to his land, posted in the right-hand ditch as you're driving into the property. So that's where my representation about the location of that specific sign came from. Came directly from Officer Miller's testimony. The court inquired to Mr. Conroe about whether or not the two signs were within 500 feet of each other. I would argue the record is crystal clear that they were not within 500 feet of each other. Officer Miller's testimony established that the initial sign was approximately a quarter to a half mile, which is anywhere between 1,300 and 2,600 feet from appellant's property. And then the second sign is located somewhere on the fence line of appellant's property, according to the record. So there's no way that those two could be within 500 feet of each other. Those are the only two clarifications I wanted to make. And unless if there's any other questions from the court, the appellant rests.
Thank you.
Other questions. Thank you, Mr. Lundgren. The matter has been well argued by both counsel, and it is taken under advisement. Thank you.
Thank you.